It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. It's always good to be with you. This is the program that follows important news. And what better barometer for what's important than the latest freakout from the left? Hold on to your seats. Donald Trump is renovating the White House by adding a big ballroom. And to add this room, he's taking down the East Wing. Yeah, this is important stuff, all right. Everybody and their brother is talking about it. Those serious minds at CNN and MSNBC, and of course, practically every Democrat politician. We'll list just a few of them, the most popular ones. How about Hillary Clinton? Here's what she wrote on the internet. It's not his house. It's your house. And he's destroying it. Now, granted, the Clintons were less known for adding to the White House and instead taking items from the White House, $190,000 worth of stuff. They returned or paid for it when they got caught. Here's one from Elizabeth Warren. Oh, you're trying to say the cost of living is skyrocketing? Donald Trump can't hear you over the sound of bulldozers demolishing a wing of the White House to build a new grand ballroom. I guess the elimination of taxes on tips and taxes on Social Security isn't enough for Elizabeth Warren to think that Donald Trump cares about the cost of living in this country. Instead, she expresses concern about architecture. Maybe if Warren was president, she'd just add a teepee. That would probably be a little cheaper. Obviously, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, is not going to refrain from weighing in. He writes, "Ripping apart White House, just like he's ripping apart our Constitution." Oh, really, Gavin? And just which part of the Constitution is that? The part where a state like California can disobey federal law and it's charged to protect our borders as spelled out in the Constitution in Article 2, Section 4, commonly known as the Invasion Clause? The United States shall guarantee to every state in the Union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion and on application of the legislature or of the executive when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence. So, Gavin, those illegal immigrants getting licenses to drive semi-trucks, trucks that are then killing people on the road, that's a protection against domestic violence? And then there's illegal rapists, murderers, human traffickers, pedophiles. But you just keep on talking about how Trump is disobeying the Constitution, Governor. There are plenty of people stupid enough to believe you, like the people who participated in No King's Day but are about to elect a communist dictator in New York City. My friends, people who vote this way get what they deserve. And that doesn't just apply to Zoran Monkami. It applies to all of the lies from Democrats, such as the lie that those who believe in borders are anti-immigration. No, we are anti-illegal immigration. It's a little sleight of hand that they conflate the two. Or the lie that those who believe in borders are racists. As a matter of fact, most immigrants, Hispanics and others, support borders because they did it the right way. Half the Border Patrol agents are Hispanic. As for those who say they do not believe in borders at all, oh, really? So do you have gates or fences around your house? Do you lock your doors, or do you just invite anybody to come in at any time who wants to? And then let's not leave out the popular lie that Democrats are fighting against oligarchy. That's Bernie Sanders' line. As a matter of fact, he's been fighting against the imminent threat of oligarchy since the early 1970s.
We are becoming an oligarchy.
That's a long time to be in imminent danger of an oligarchy without actually seeing the oligarchy. Unless he means judges. That's the real oligarchy that's forming, but that's not what Bernie means, of course. He means billionaires. He used to mean millionaires. He had to change it to billionaires because he became a millionaire. He owns three houses. But he lectures us about our wealth needing to be redistributed. So it's not just Newsom spewing these lies, but he did pop off about Trump and the White House. By the way, Newsom, you didn't mind using tax dollars on the California State Capitol, did you? Anyway, Newsom and the Democratic Party and their ilk, they're having a meltdown over the Trump ballroom. Let's examine this phenomenon more carefully to see if this is really such disturbing, unusual news about a president renovating the White House. I could go back to the beginning of our history when the White House was burned down and had to be rebuilt, but let's not even go there. Let's just keep it the 20th century. 1902, Theodore Roosevelt adds the West Wing. He probably never knew it was going to become a TV show, but he did add the West Wing. If he knew about that stupid TV show, he probably wouldn't have called it the West Wing. 1909, President William Taft remodeled and expanded the West Wing. And at that time, he created the Oval Office. Maybe you heard of that. Maybe you haven't had a problem with the White House having an Oval Office. Just saying. In 1927, President Calvin Coolidge had the roof rebuilt and a third floor added. He did this after an engineering report showed that the roof trusses were weakened and unsafe. In 1933, Franklin Roosevelt installed an indoor swimming pool and the entire East Wing. In 1952, Truman gutted the entire building. This is according to the White House Historical Society. They say, and I quote, early in 1948, in response to President Truman's concerns, engineers confirmed that the White House was structurally weak and in danger of collapse. Some said the White House was standing only from the force of habit. That's when they diagnosed it. It got gutted in 52. This was a total reconstruction of the interior. It took over 4 years. The interior was literally dismantled and put back together. It displaced the president and his family to the nearby Blair House until 1952. The White House we know today is largely due to the renovation led by Truman, the Historical Association says. Nixon took the indoor swimming pool that Roosevelt put in, and he got rid of it. He turned it into the White House press area. Is that where they got the word press pool? I don't think so. But Nixon also built a bowling alley. Ford decided to bring back a swimming pool, but he built it outdoors. I already mentioned stuff that the Clintons took from the building, but the Clintons did do actual renovations as well in the family kitchen, in the Oval Office, in the Treaty Room, in other rooms. Now, admittedly, there is a difference between these other renovations and Trump's. Trump is paying for it himself, either by himself or from associates in the private sector. American tax dollars paid for the others, for the most part. One exception, Obama didn't use tax dollars, but he did add a tennis court that could easily be used for a basketball court. And Truman, who mostly used tax dollars, did put up some of the money himself. But listening to the left, you'd think that history is coming down before our eyes. We're hearing about how important our historical structures are. Gee, they didn't seem to care about historical statues being torn down. And I don't just mean the ones from the Confederacy. Statues of Lincoln, statues of Roosevelt. Many, many presidents have renovated the White House. But try explaining that to Rachel Maddow, who says Trump plans to stay.
Absolutely amazing. Surprise! Donald Trump is literally destroying the people's house because apparently he thinks it's his house and not ours, and I'm guessing he has no intention of moving out of it ever.
Ah, shut up!
You tell her, Sylvester. All right, my friends, watch for two events in January 2029. That's after the next presidential election. January 2029. Watch for two events. First, Trump will leave office. Second, Maddow will not apologize for that comment. But I, Bob Siegel, will say right now, I'm just making the obvious obvious.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook or questions at bobsiegel.net. When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel's novels may start out looking like typical stories, but in no time at all, they go directions you would never have dreamed about. Just listen to the premise of Bob Siegel's unusual story, Choice of the Lorelei. Martha Flannery, an aggressive missionary, sets out for the Frisian Islands to convert the newly discovered tribe called Reinu. Here she enters into a strong battle of wills with Dr. Connors, a cultural anthropologist who wants to protect the Reinu people from outside influence, especially evangelism. Connor's strange manners and obsession with the Reinu are only the first of several eerie mysteries, including previous visitors to the island who never returned home, and an elderly gentleman claiming to be 4,000 years old. Choice of the Lorelei, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We'll be right back.
1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Well, good afternoon, Bob. How are you doing this afternoon?
Doing okay, my friend. And yourself?
I am doing great. It has been one hectic news week, that is for sure.
As it is every week.
It surely is.
Since 2015, when Trump first ran for office.
Something like that, yeah. I mean, again, just so many things happening. Surprisingly enough, I am not going to be talking about Trump today. How about that?
I know. Wait a minute. I think there's a new rule here at the station that you have to talk about Trump.
Every single hour, it seems like. So some of the crazy stories. Let's start off with a sad story, unfortunately. Are you familiar with June Lockhart?
Oh, of course. But yeah. She passed away a number of years ago, didn't she?
No, she just passed away just now.
I remember her. I was a big fan of Lost in Space. The first season. The of second course. Two I seasons know. They lost it. But I loved June Lockhart.
Yeah. She passed away just 2 days ago at the age of 100. So she lived for a very, very long time.
How was I so sure she had already passed away? Well, I'm glad she lived to be 100.
Yeah, that's for
sure.
But
I'm sad that she passed away.
Another role I did like her, I do want to shout this out, is Ruth Martin in Lassie. She was the mother figure.
Yeah, she was
too.
Famous for Lassie.
Yeah. But by the way, interesting story. I don't know if you ever said this on the air or not, but you did tell me an interesting story about Lost in Space. So the first season went how it was supposed to go, and then they
It was legitimate science fiction.
Yeah. And then by the second season, when they were going to make it, Batman, the series, actually.
Well, halfway
super
through season one, Batman premiered as a mid-season replacement. And of course, by that time, most of Lost in Space episodes had at least been scripted, if not filmed. Batman clobbered Lost in Space in the ratings. Now, Batman, at first, if you look at episode one, they were trying to take themselves seriously, but it wasn't very serious, so they immediately realized that the best way to do it was to play it kind of comic and lighthearted, and they had all these zany characters with zany costumes, so the morons at Lost in Space, they said, well, we'll have stupid, silly plots, too, with fantasy-like characters in weird, colorful costumes, and they just ruined the series, and they betrayed the fans. There's a handful from season two that are okay, particularly toward the beginning, probably because, again, a few of those scripts
were already written.
And then as time went on, they realized their mistake, and they tried to get out of it, and they tried to make more science fiction ones again. But by that time, it was done. And Dr. Smith was this great, nefarious, evil character. At first, they turned him into this bumbling moron. They overdid his part. He was a complete coward, and people couldn't relate to a coward every week. He wasn't really the hero. The original Robinson family, you never heard from them anymore, except for Will Robinson. It was just too bad. I love season one. Can't say much for seasons two and three.
Well, at least you could say it's better than the movie. I don't even know what that movie was.
That movie sucked. Now, they did remake it as a series, and I watched it, and I liked it, and objectively, it was better, but of course, I grew up on the other one, so that's where all the nostalgia is.
And to be fair, for that new one, my bar was set at just be better than the movie. Anything better than the movie, please.
Oh, that wasn't too hard.
It was
better than the movie.
I was like,
if I had to be objective, it was better than the original series too. But of course, I loved the original series as a kid.
Better than season one.
Well, probably. Way too slow paced, though. Not as fast paced as season one.
That's why I liked season one a little bit more.
And you know what? To be honest, that was on for three seasons too, the remake. And I only saw season one. So I can't even be that fair. But it was good. It was certainly better than the other. But again, I grew up on the other one, and I'm still in love with season one of the other one. So that's where my emotions
are. Well, what I will say is season two and three, they're on par with season one. It's not better. It's not worse. It's seriously just the same. So
In the new series
is what I meant. Yeah.
I liked that they had a female Dr. Smith in the third one. That was kind of
It was very interesting.
She's a great actress.
She is.
Parker Posey, isn't that who played that part?
Yeah. Now, again, comparing the two, I still go with the original, but nevertheless, again, I kept my bars pretty low on that show.
Well, we both agree that the theatrical release sucked. Terrible. Oh, so you did like the original series?
I liked the first season, and
you're with me on the first
season.
And
then the second season, I thought, oh gosh, this is not going so well, and I did not know it was because of Batman. That's what you taught me about.
Made the most sense because we just couldn't figure out. My little brother and I would watch it, and they go, what is going on with them? Why are they ruining this great series?
Well, you know, the studios seem to ruin a lot of stuff, that's for sure.
That is for sure.
Yeah. So some other news happened, and you gave me some inspiration to go ahead and talk about this just very quickly before I get into my main topics I wanted to. So let's take a listen.
Yeah, this art heist at the French Museum makes me feel like I'm living in the middle of a Pink Panther movie with the Phantom striking.
And again, there's no leads. They did arrest two people.
I heard that they arrested a couple people, but yes. At this point, they're not even convinced that they're the actual ones. Is
exactly.
That the case?
So how is this even possible? I'm trying to figure out.
Well, it is France. We could does your dog bite?
I guess Inspector Clouseau is on the case, so I guess we should be okay, right?
The step in the name of the law.
So for those who don't know, last week, some thieves stole 8 pieces of French crown jewels, including items from Empress, is it Eugenie's? Is that
correct? Well, some of it, is she the one that was married to Napoleon
correct,
Bonaparte?
Yes,
it was
yeah.
The Bonaparte family.
Mm-hmm. This happened during the daylight, mind you, too, this operation. Thieves dropped one of the crowns in their escape, and the monetary value is considered incalculable due to the item's historical and cultural significance.
I heard that only one of the security cameras was operating, and it was facing the wrong direction.
That's, yeah. And then
since
the other
this was France, I thought maybe they still had masks on the cameras left over from COVID days, and they forgot to take them off.
So there is some other video footage outside, apparently, showing that the thieves were emerging from the museum.
Well, they
itself,
came,
too,
they so. Looked like workers. They
yeah.
looked like builders, so who paid any attention to them?
So apparently it's supposed to be valued nearly 88 million euros in value. So hopefully they do find the museum pieces, but also find better security systems. That's
have you
sure.
heard some of the people being interviewed on the street? Well, it was a brilliant crime. If they get away with it, they deserve to get it. And then I stop and I think, okay, they're justifying a crime, but okay, well, these are the same people that are justifying assassinations. The assassination of Charlie Kirk, the assassination of an insurance salesman. Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about the first ever time there was art that was trying to be stolen at the Louvre before?
I have not heard that.
It was done by a former employee by the name of Vincenzo Perega. It occurred during 1911 where he tried to steal the Mona Lisa. Luckily, recovered 2 years later in Italy and they brought it back to the Louvre. So
he actually did steal the Mona Lisa.
He did really? Steal it and they were able to get it
did
back.
Did he paint a mustache on it?
No. As far as I know, it's not Dadaist.
His head would have rolled if he'd done that.
Oh, no. He would be inspiration for the Dadaist movement. In the 60s or something. So that's a pretentious joke for all you
well,
fans
you know,
out there.
It is. We see this in movies so often, the great museum heist. It was just, I stand there going, this feels
this
like I'm living
is.
In the middle of a movie yeah. right now.
All right, so let's get into our main topics. This first one we're going to talk about, I am not surprised in the slightest. Kamala Harris and Gavin Newsom have now publicly stated that they're interested in running for the president in this upcoming election.
No.
I know, finally.
Now, who in the world is going to support Harris? I think there's people still stupid enough to support Newsom. But Harris just tried to do a big fundraiser, and the guys that were going to come said they're not even going to come if she's in charge of it.
Right, right. Let me just go ahead and start with the part about them saying interested. Kamala Harris was interviewed by BBC Sunday Morning, stating, quote, that she could possibly be the next president in an interview, teasing that she may throw her hat back in the ring in the future, while she insists that she has not yet decided for sure if she's going to run for the presidency.
They always say they haven't decided for sure. It means exactly. nothing.
Nor when would that be if she actually did jump in. She did confirm that she's not done in the political world, and she brushes aside polls.
Newsflash, she's done in the political world.
It's
she
true.
Just may not be aware of it yet.
And she brushed off any polls that said she wouldn't stand a chance for the presidency.
Of course, is she any worse than Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? I
no,
don't think
of course
so.
Not. But again,
they're both just a stupid.
I would say in terms of AOC, I think.
Well, twit doesn't have the word salads, but she's still a twit.
Yeah. I was going to say AOC doesn't usually use those political talking terms on her paper. Will she repeat over and over? I would grow up in a middle class family, middle class lawn, middle class mac and cheese with my middle class bowl with my middle class. Gosh.
And if I get elected, I'll give you a middle-class, mediocre presidency.
She also notes that there are many ways to serve in our government, which means that she could push her causes without even stamping foot in the White
Wait,
House.
Wait, now, there she's got a point. There are a lot of ways to serve in the government. She could run out and get him a sandwich. There's all kinds of ways she could serve.
Kamala, I could use a coffee right now if you want to go do that for me. So, yeah, I agree with you. I don't know what Harris is thinking. And again, I know there's
she doesn't stand a lawyer's chance
no.
in hell.
And I know there's plenty of people who said, oh, well, it's Biden's fault that she lost because Biden should have dropped out earlier and she could have made her point.
No, longer she was in the race, the worse she did. For the first couple of weeks, she was way up in the polls. The more she started talking, the more her campaign said, stop her interviews, give her as little as possible. The longer it went on, the more more of the shine was leaving the armor.
Not to mention the debates didn't help anything for her case either.
And I know she claimed she won that debate against Trump, but she didn't. I've seen Trump do better, but I don't believe she won that debate against Trump.
I couldn't agree more. And again, the more important part is what the debate is there for in the first place. It's supposed to sway opinions drastically. It did not do any of the sort for neither Trump or for Kamala, especially Kamala.
Now, I will say this. She needed it more. I don't know who the Democrats have that would be any better is the problem. I believe, and this is only if the Democrats wise up, huge if, that their nominee is somebody that we are not talking about right now.
Yeah.
Probably somebody who's not a politician. I think they're going to try to bring in somebody from the private sector so that they could have their own version of Trump.
Interesting, because again,
maybe Mark Cuban, maybe...
Well, Mark has definitely maybe denounced Smith, it. But then, like you said, everyone denounces it at first before they actually...
I have no thoughts of running right now, but if by chance I'm called by the American people, then how can I refuse?
That's what every political answer is, basically.
I wish they'd serve it on toast.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. So, I personally think it's going to be this guy. Democratic California Governor Gavin Newsom was telling CBS News Sunday Morning this morning in an exclusive interview that he will consider whether to run for president after the 2026 midterm election. So, again, he's showing interest.
He's been running for president for the last 2 years. Just because he doesn't admit it doesn't mean he's not running
for president. But again, I just find that...
All his going up and posturing against Trump, that's not with being a good governor in mind. That's with being a candidate for president.
But the way I view it is this. If I'm the Democratic Party, for example, he has shown you that he has certain conservative leniencies here and there.
When they're convenient.
Exactly.
And they last 5 minutes.
Exactly. But that's
his position changes with the wind.
But we're talking about the Democratic Party, a party that's grasping at straws right now. So if there's going to be anyone that they're interested in, possibly, it's got to be Gavin Newsom at this point. That's why I consider it every single time. Oh, he's definitely going to be the nomination.
There's a lot of ladies that'll vote for him because they like his hair. I hate to say it. They're voting for Mondami because of his amiable smile.
J.D. Vance.
All right, he's a communist and he hates Jews, but golly, he sure has a nice smile.
J.D. Vance, you got to get a new gel in your hair, dude. I'm telling you. So this interview was actually taped on Thursday in San Jose. Newsom was asked whether he could give serious thought, end quote, to a White House bid once the next year.
He has given serious thought to absolutely nothing else. Who are we kidding?
Well, now, so he did reply saying, I'd be lying otherwise. I'd just be lying. And I'm not. I'm never a liar. I can't do that.
See, now, that is the great paradox in philosophy. Somebody saying, I'm never a liar, or I'm always a liar. But if they're lying, then they're the opposite of what they're claiming.
Oh, my God. And I immediately, when I read that quote, I can't stop laughing. I mean, come on. How many scandals have you been a part of? What about going back to COVID with the laundry room situation?
If he was Pinocchio, his nose would be bigger than the entire San Andreas fault.
It's so true. The other thing, too, he says that fate will determine that. What he said when asked whether he was moving closer to working out a reason for a national candidacy. The other thing that this article mentions too is that he was making trips to key battleground states like South Carolina in July. Yeah, that's an interesting point to make of why was he in there in the first place, being the governor of California, mind you. And then during the trip, he made multiple stops, which was covered with a CBS News Sunday Morning interview, where he met with Democratic leaders and stopped by a coffee shop with rally activists to help employees serve espresso drinks to customers.
I saw some of that. I saw a video. Yeah, it's like, hey, this worked for Trump at McDonald's. You notice how they all try to imitate Trump while they put him down with the other side of their mouth?
It's true. I was going to say,
we're talking about Trump after all.
And this happens on the conservative side too. I remember Ted Cruz went into a soup kitchen. He was like, is there anything I could do to help you? And the workers are looking around like, no, we're good.
Maybe leave. I shouldn't say that. I do like Ted Cruz.
No. It was just that one funny one that I could think of.
But it is disingenuous when the only one that pulled it off was Trump. And even he said, I'm doing this just so I can have it on record that I worked at McDonald's 30 minutes longer than Kamala.
Now, Newsom did say something interesting in the interview. They asked him, is there anything really holding you back from actually announcing your candidacy for
his
the presidency?
His hair gel. It's hard to move with that.
Well, besides that, he said that he faces a daily challenge throughout his life, specifically his dyslexia, he says. He says, and I quote, I have no idea. The idea that a guy who has a 960 on his SATs that still struggles to read scripts, that is always on the back of the classroom, the idea that you wouldn't even throw that out is in itself extraordinary. Who the hell knows? I'm looking forward to who presents themselves in 2028 and who meets that moment. And that's the question for the American people, he says.
Well, this raises a few questions. If he can't read scripts, how come he sounds so scripted every time
he talks? It's true. It's true.
And I'm less concerned about dyslexia and reading and more about his dyslexic policies.
I was going to say, it sounds like his dyslexia is entering into his policies and not what he's signing into our state itself.
Well, maybe he thought the French restaurant was a drive-through Taco Bell. And that was due to his dyslexia.
Probably. The only thing mentioning is that he said he's not focused on that presidency candidacy. Instead, Prop 50. Can I remind folks, please, it's a scam. Prop 50 is an absolute scam. And the same thing goes with the Texas situation. Gerrymandering should be eliminated in our country. What you have should be set boundaries. We shouldn't continue to move these boundaries along because it just causes a lot more scams, a lot more
scandals. Now, I had heard, and you've probably followed this more than I have, that in Texas, this gerrymandering is to try to repair some forced gerrymandering that came down from the courts before, where they were telling them to draw districts more so that we'd have more of an all-black and all-white district, and that they're just saying, since we don't have to do that anymore, let's go back and draw them the way we should have.
Yes, exactly.
Is that true?
Yes, it is 100% true. But no, mainstream media is going to say, no, it's because Trump wants those extra seats, right, obviously. Right. So
I think what they're doing in Texas is reparative, and you could make a case for that.
You could, but again, I just wish...
Like the idea of it.
I just wish that we had those strict boundaries, and that's what you get. No more, no less. Stop trying to redraw the maps everywhere.
Yeah.
That's what I say. Last thing to mention, too, is that in recent days, the Justice Department said it would send its own monitors to supervise special elections in the upcoming California elections and the gubernatorial election in New Jersey. Newsom has denounced this move, calling it a Trump administration move to intimidate Democrats.
Well, they're already planning ahead of time for the midterms to claim that Trump cheated. That's why they're trying to come out ahead of time, so that when it happens, they'll have a context to it. They'll say, see, we warned you.
Yes, exactly. And again, I couldn't agree more with the Justice Department's quote saying that the goal is to ensure transparency, ballot security, and compliance with federal law. Thank you.
Well, and again, I've said it a gazillion times, the 2020 election was rigged, and with all we're learning about the Biden presidency, I really believe that's the next shoe that's going to drop. I know you keep hearing me say that, but folks, sooner or later, it's going to happen.
And not to mention, again, there was some scandals with the 2024, but the important thing...
But
again,
not enough to make a difference.
Exactly.
Trump won by a landslide.
Exactly. So that's why it's...
Well, they fixed 2016 too, but they weren't counting on Trump being as popular as he was.
And that's
why... So they tried to fix that in 2020. And then when Trump came in and overwhelmed their machines again, they had to turn off six states at midnight and recount in the morning.
Interesting, right?
And that doesn't look just a little fishy to everybody?
Apparently not. So when we come back, I got my last topic of the night, and we're going to go into sports. But I think this is actually very important because, again, this actually does involve our federal government doing something about this whole situation.
Well, Brendan, as you know, my policy on this show is not to talk about what I want to talk about, but only what I think will be of interest to the American people.
Absolutely. We'll be right back.
Bob Siegel. Looking for a church? Maybe not. Perhaps you've had your fill of churches. Maybe you even grew up in the church. Maybe as a kid you were dragged to Sunday school against your will. Maybe you used to throw spit wads as Mrs. Pumpernickel tried desperately to interest you in the missionary journeys of the Apostle Paul. You may have grown up listening to long sermons, anxiously looking at your watch to see how much of the game you were missing at home on TV as the pastor made his 97th point. Or perhaps you were not raised as a Christian at all. Instead, you have merely encountered Christians. Maybe some obnoxious personality tried to shove the gospel down your throat using all the tact of a lawnmower in a barber shop. Well, my friend, Perfect Christians don't exist because perfect people don't exist. That's why Jesus died for our sins. So I'm not going to tell you that the people of Skyline Church are perfect. I'm just going to tell you that we come real close. No, actually, you'll just find people who struggle with life the same as you. But we're honest about the struggle, and we help each other with the struggle. What you will find is a church that takes the love of Jesus Christ seriously. After all, his message is one of mercy and inclusion, and we don't need 97 points to talk about God. Ask anybody. Our sermons have never made more than 96 points.
Skyline Church. You've already heard some of the wonderful customer reviews of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament, but now listen to some highlights from a professional review by Lisa Ruth of Communities Digital News. The book is literally a page-turner that will delight children and adults alike. Readers will find a piece of themselves in Mike, whom Siegel portrays perfectly. He develops the 12-year-old deftly and makes him real to the readers. They will adore Aunt Lorene. They will remember their first love and the pain of betrayal from a friend. Caligula the cat is a wonderfully clever addition to the story. He steals the book with his caustic insight, making all readers wonder just what their own pets would say if they could talk. The real gift of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament is the lessons it weaves amid the adventure. It reminds us of the social and personal responsibility we share and the repercussions of our actions on those around us. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has adventure, entertainment, and some extremely important lessons. What more could you ask for in a book?
I'm Dr. David Poole, president of San Diego Christian College. Did you know that SDCC has been training servant leaders since 1970? That's over 50 years of making an impact. Our degree and certificate programs blend academic excellence with a Christian worldview. Whether you're a traditional age college student or a working professional who wants to complete their degree or certificate program, we may be a match for you. Learn more at sdcc.edu. That's sdcc.edu. San Diego Christian College, over 50 years in the making.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Say hello again to Brendan Thomas.
All right, Bob, strap yourself in because this is going to be one crazy, crazy story. We have sports athletes, X-ray poker tables, and the mafia all involved in this whole story. So this is one of the biggest news stories of the whole week, almost, it seems like. The NBA and the gambling scandals have been going on, and now it's expanded into the NFL, actually, too, for that matter, just recently. 31 federal indictments happened this week. This is due to a seven-year-long investigation done by the FBI. The case focused on rigged poker games. Two of them were announced, and they were allegedly involved prominent athlete figures. They were specifically Portland Trail Blazers head coach Chauncey Billups and Miami Heat guard Terry Rozier, and now just today, two more sports athletes have been named as well.
Boy, they're dropping like flies.
Exactly. Clippers head coach Ty Lue was allegedly a part of the situation, and Hall of Fame tight end Antonio Gates. We also had a former NBA player and coach Damon Jones called out as well as one of the perpetrators in this whole situation. Investigators state that the scheme to defraud players at a poker table began in April 2019 when defendant Robert Stroud, also known as Black Rob, that's an actual nickname for this, and other co-conspirators began devising a ruse to use technology to rig illegal poker games, specifically in Texas Hold'em, against unwitting wealthy players whom they called fish or whales, who were aware that they were playing in illegal high-stakes games but believed that their games were straight against other wealthy players. Every other person at the table would know that the scheme was going on. So how they would do this is, again, the dealer would be passing out the cards, and the dealer has a specific contact lens to see through these cards.
Yeah, there was an X-ray ability, I believe, for some of them.
Exactly. So they could see, oh, this card's coming up next. And so they would either A, text them on their phone, B, be able to do hand movements to help let the players know, hey, this is your next card. So whether it be flicking the ear, maybe a scratch on the chin, these are certain things that they would quote to the players. And again, they would purposely sometimes make the other players win to have them think, oh, I'm actually winning and beating this guy who makes millions of dollars. I can actually go ahead and keep winning this whole thing. But in actuality, the game was rigged against them the entire time. So the scheme started.
And they were also rigging the way certain sports were played too. Weren't they getting players to throw some of the games?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so very quickly, let's go to this specific situation. So there was an example of this cited in a court document for there was a game in Miami. Defendant John Mozilla played quarterback. Now, a quarterback is the person who relies the information to the table. Again, doing the whole chin scratches, maybe picking at the ear, something like that. If Mozilla had the best hand, he would tap his arm or wrist. If another inside player did, Mozilla touched his $1,000 poker chip and so on and so forth. If the fish had the best hand, Mozilla would touch his back chips, indicating to the other players that they should fold and he should win the hand for that round. So again, making sure that he would win a little bit of extra money here and there so often. But these were done in so many different ways. There was even hidden cameras within the poker chip trays to help read the card as well. This was very, very elaborate for all this stuff, for sure. So to mention some other stuff here, the same concept applied to when Billups and Jones were involved in the game. They added an extra layer of nuance to give into because of their celebrity. During an April 2019 game, defendant Sophia Way texted the group that Billups and defendant Eric Ernest, also known as Spook, had won two improbable hands, gunshot on the river or a straight draw needing a hit a middle card to make his hand against the same player. While Stroud responded to the player, acted like he wanted Chauncey to have his money because he was starstruck, Way insisted they insert another member of the cheating team, a Middle Eastern guy, end quote, into the game so that Billups and Ernest could purposely lose to him and dispel any suspicions. Damon Jones tipped off others about injuries that the public didn't know, according to a report done by the FBI. This is exactly what you're talking about. One example that was listed in the FBI report was that a certain Los Angeles Lakers star would be sitting out on February 9th, a game against Milwaukee. He said, in quote, get a big bet on Milwaukee tonight before the information is out. Player 3, in quote, is out tonight. The indictment alleges Jones texted a co-conspirator, bet enough so that D. Jones can eat too now. The one Laker that they were talking about had to sit out? LeBron James. That was a game time decision. Somehow that information from the Lakers inside got to the information to Damon Jones, who's not even a part of the NBA anymore at that point, who then passed it on to his co-conspirator to help make that bet. And sure enough, knowing that knowledge, they placed the bet and the Bucks were favored to win by 7.5. So they had to win by 8 points or more. And they happened to win that night by 9 points. So he was able to make money and deal with that. So who organized this whole situation? Well, this is where the mafia steps into the whole thing. La Costa Nostra, or LCN, are a mafia group of family that live out in Manhattan, New York. They help organize all these events, these very elaborate.
Now, the mafia being prosecuted?
They are, yes. So they were involved in support and protection, often merging its own existing legal high-stakes poker games, which were not necessarily rigged, into the scheme. The court documents say that the Bon Anau.
Better pronounce it properly, Brendan. Yeah. This is the mafia. They could be listening.
They're listening to me. But not, I'm going to say the B crime family just for now. You guys can look it up later.
It safe.
Had already been back in a game at 147 Lexington Avenue. While the Gambino crime family, that's a big one, that's for sure, with support from at least one of the Genovese crime family members were there, hosted a game at 80 Washington Place. In 2023, those two games merged, jointly operating the rigging scheme using technology supplied by Stroud. LCN furthered the scheme in at least one instance by alleging robbing an individual identified as John Doe number 7, who initially involved with the rigged poker games, of an altered Deckmate 1 shuffling machine, which in its unaltered form retailed for more than $10,000. The mafia and non-mob co-conspirators also managed many financial issues related to the scheme, often using numerous tactics that they have become most infamous for. For example, in November 2022, defendant Zen Hu allegedly threatened and assaulted John Doe number 5 for not paying his poker gambling debts. In fall 2023, several of the co-conspirators allegedly reportedly extorted John Doe number 6 by invoking their mob connections, which eventually frightened him to paying his $10,000 debt. Defendant Anthony Schneiderman allegedly laundered the proceeds of the poker games through shell companies and third parties, ultimately paying other co-conspirators in cash or cryptocurrency. Ugh, I hate that term still, cryptocurrency. Now, this is all coming from Rick Patel, who is the New York special agent in charge of this investigation from the Homeland Security investigations. And we also have a quote from the assistant director in charge of the FBI, Christopher Rayai, I think is how you pronounce it, Rayai. With the alleged involvement of three Las Cosa Nostra family crime families, an NBA head coach, a Hall of Famer, and other sports athletes, as well as other current and former professional athletes, the investigative work that accumulated with this morning's operation are reminiscent of a Hollywood movie. No kidding. I can think of Ocean's 11. I can think of so many other movies that are involved in this whole situation. But this is not luck, and this is not theatrics. Using a lure of high-stakes winnings and the promise to play alongside well-known professional athletes, these defendants allegedly defrauded unwitting victims out of tens of millions of dollars, established a financial pipeline to the La Cosa Nostra. Overall, victims rigged about $7.15 million in this whole situation. One of the victims is John Doe number one, who did $1.8 million in the game staged in June and July of 2023. Following his arrest, Billups, the head coach I talked to you about, appeared in court on Thursday and was released from custody on conditions of a substantial bond with the federal court in the Eastern District of New York, as well as surrendering his passport. He is next scheduled to appear in court on November 24th. On Thursday evening, his attorney, Chris Haywood, said in a statement that they would intend to fight the charges. Now, all this is going to accumulate to one last thing I'm going to make, and then this is my strongest point. This past Tuesday, NCAA announced that coaches and athletes are allowed to bet and gamble on professional games. They announced this past Tuesday. That upsets me like crazy. Do you know how many connections college athletes and college coaches have with professional teams? You're just waiting for another scandal like this to occur in NCAA by allowing this to happen.
So you don't want to see them bet at all, even
no.
if it's a legitimate bet.
Exactly.
You're saying because of their knowledge of the game, they could still be privy to certain odds because they know who's going to be in which game.
But again, not only that, but personal connections they have. These athletes know scouts. These scouts know the head coaches or many executives. This information could get passed on everywhere.
This is reminding me, and maybe you need to refresh me, of the Pete Rose scandal. Was that just about him betting on games, or was he cheating while he
bet? No, he was playing on the team, and he bet his team to win, mind you.
But he wasn't actually cheating the way this thing.
No, they don't want athletes to do it because obviously they can say, oh, well, the athletes can bet themselves to lose and not even try on the court, thus making
That's a legitimate concern.
No, for sure. But again,
don't athletes make enough money that they shouldn't have to do this?
Exactly.
Is it the thrill and the allure of the game, you think?
I don't know for sure. The fact that you have this money and this power, money makes people different sometimes.
Well, it is interesting because I've gambled very few times in my life, but a number of years ago, we had a bachelor party for a friend. We went to Vegas and I played a few blackjack games, and I was telling myself, when you win some and you're ahead, that's the time to quit. But I discovered that you don't feel like quitting because the game is very exciting and you get caught up in the euphoria of the moment. Now, I still did fine. I broke even, but I could see how people could get caught up in that stuff.
And again, if you look at it at a religious aspect, I asked you, is gambling straight up
and
a
I
sin?
I said, only if you lose. Gambling's a sin only if you lose.
Well, okay, so in a more serious note, you said no, only if there's an addiction.
If you set a limit and say, I had so much money to spend on this vacation, I could spend it for a nice hotel or dinner or a show or gambling, but you say, I'm not going to go beyond this, and if I lose this much, I'm done. If you have that kind of discipline, and very few people do, then I don't see anything wrong with it.
Absolutely. And again, there's plenty of resources if you do have a gambling addiction out there because it's been set up. I'm trying to look up what the phone number is.
Hey, couldn't the mafia do something more constructive, like keep Mondami from winning?
Why waste
all that effort with sports? I'm not justifying the mafia, but if they want to do something constructive, maybe they can get that moron out of New York City.
Now, specifically for California, it says here, you can call 1-800-GAMBLER, which is 1-800-426-2537. Or if you want to do it via text message, it's support to 53342. Those are some resources to help you with any gambling nicotine addictions that you do have or for family members. So I do want to pass that on.
But it is interesting that people that are making just millions in sports feel they've got to now go and make more money.
Yes.
There's just something about that.
And not to mention, to open
your eyebrow.
And again, to open it to college athletes, again, you're already stricken college athletes as it is when it comes to gambling in the first place.
And that's
place,
a time so. In life when people are still trying to figure things out anyway. They don't need all these extra
Yeah,
headaches.
You already give them the NIL deals, so they're already getting paid while doing these sports games already. You're already giving them the scholarships.
They're getting a fame that they can't possibly yet be mature enough to assimilate.
Absolutely. So I think you've done enough. I don't think you need this extra ruling, and I hope that the NCAA really reconsiders this decision, especially with the scandal here. And not to mention, I won't be surprised if I talk to you 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now, whenever I'm back on the air. Hey, by the way, 7 more athletes just popped up out of this whole scandal. So it's very, very tricky. But congratulations to the FBI for finding out about this and getting this done, too, because I know they have a lot of other investigations.
That's for sure. Well, I don't approve of the mafia, but I'll still say The Godfather was one heck of a good movie.
There you go. Well, Bob, thank you so much.
Brendan, it's a pleasure as always.
Now, we do want to mention to the audience that next week will actually
Jim Barrier.
A Jim Barrier show.
Jim Barrier. Okay.
Yes.
And then Mike Friedenberg will be substitute hosting for me 2 weeks from
tonight. Exactly. So you get to look forward to a Jim Barrier show next week, folks. Stump Jim.
Stump Jim.
There you go.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.